My name is Tina and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. I'd like to start out actually by thanking the committee. This has been an amazing convention for me. Something to blush. Would you guys mind standing up for us? I really think. Thank you, guys. So my sobriety date is February 7th, 2015. So God willing, in a couple of days, I'll have another medallion in my pocket. I have a sponsor, I have a home group, I have sponsees, and I have amazing fellows. I see you. And I think I'll be, I hope I'll be forever grateful for what AA has given me. I shared on Friday at a meeting that I've had a bit of a, I said rough year, we can call it challenging, and a fellow reminded me yesterday that I'm following the plan. I'm following the plan, so I'm in my 7th, 8th year, and that's where the emotional breakdowns happen. To all newcomers, don't worry, really don't worry, it'll be fine. As long as you stick to these rooms, it will be fine. So I came in when I was 34, so I'm 42 now, in the prime of my life. And I'm one of those who, like, I haven't lost a lot. I haven't crashed cars. I haven't been gifted a driver's license either. I guess, I don't know if that's something to do with it. I haven't per se lost husbands or partners after partner or fallen out with my family. I also don't have a partner. And unfortunately, most of my closest family is not here anymore due to this disease. But I'm here. By the grace of this program, I was granted 10 days at my mother's bedside. And my sponsor told me to go be of service, and I had no idea what she meant. Like, I'm sorry, what the fuck do you mean? The woman's an alcoholic, she's in hospice, she's got wine hidden in the cupboard that she doesn't want to show me. What am I supposed to do here? But lo and behold, I was shown the way, and I was just there. And I brought her the things that she wanted. I left her alone when she wanted to be alone, and I got to make a really beautiful amends. She died peacefully. And she left me with this beautiful gift of peace. I'm able to be there for my sister today. I'm able to be there for her. She's a single mother. I have a beautiful nephew who's never seen me drunk. He might have experienced me in his first year of being on this beautiful planet. Being a bit tense, being a bit out of it. I stopped drinking partially because I thought my sister was going to find out that I was the third alcoholic in her family and that she was going to keep me from him. And funny enough, because I'm out of an alcoholic family, I was a bit like sad on her behalf. Like, what if I can't, you know, help her? But I am there for her, and it's all due to this program. There's no doubt about it. And the other reason I stopped drinking was because I thought I was damaging myself. I have a chronic back problem that I thought I had caused all on me. It turns out it's not necessarily something I've caused, but it got me to the rooms. Those two things got me to the rooms, and there are people here today who saw me come in and who have helped me along the way. I started drinking when I was, I don't know, 14 maybe. Not heavily, because I had an active alcoholic in the house, and he didn't look very happy. So I didn't really understand why I would go out and do this. So my mother, I guess she tried to control me a bit. She gave me the benefit of buying me 3 drinks that I could take with me as long as I promised not to drink more than that. And for about a year or two, that's what I did. I had no interest. And then some of the not so good kids in my neighborhood got me really drunk one day. Excuse me. And I actually still wasn't that interested. It wasn't a really happy experience. I remember it as just a thing. But a couple of years later, when I went to the equivalent of high school, I needed help to be able to be around people, to be popular. I was an overachiever as well. That's how I got through my early childhood. And that was not fun for everybody else. And so since everybody else was drinking as well, that's what we did. But all through high school, business college, I never really drank more than most other people. I've later learned that I didn't drink particularly more than the people I surrounded myself with. And over time, that became the people that drank the most. And eventually, when people didn't want to drink with me anymore, I just started doing it on my own. I ended up with 15, I ended up in a relationship that I didn't really want to be in. Not that he was abusive or, like, he just got really unlucky. Because I turned to be a bit like my mother and I wanted to discuss everything, and he was not very keen on that. So there was a lot of me yelling and a lot of him nodding. And eventually, after 11 painful years, we went our separate ways. Correction, he dumped me. And and I had to leave because I finished my studies and I couldn't stay at the student housing where we're at, and I just lost my job, the first one. Correction, I walked away. Just I happened to be able to say I quit 5 seconds before my manager said, "I don't think we're working out." So I did my first geographical. I moved to the Canary Islands. 27, and being a heavy drinker at the time, I thought, you know, what's the best way to get to know people? That was to go out drinking, and so I did. And within 2.5 years, I went from having a small glass of wine with dinner to having at least a bottle plus whatever the Irish coffee I would have. We spoke about Irish coffees yesterday. Coffee. And I started living life the way I hadn't done, actually, in my early teens. I meant one-night stands, ending up in weird places, having to have strangers drive me home, and doing, like, laying the foundations of the walk of shame, basically. It was a 2.5-kilometer stretch from the hotel I worked in and where we partied and to the village where I lived. It's a very long way in the middle of the night, and it's a bit like Ostend here, very cold and very windy, barefoot. But I did it. I did it a lot of times. And still, it didn't really dawn on me that maybe something was not going in the right direction, because I was drinking sophisticated wine. I was having nice Irish coffees, not the ones that my mother used to make. And I was different than my parents, absolutely different, and different than the rest of my family. I studied, you know, I had a degree. There you go. It didn't really make a difference, to be honest. When I walked through the rooms of AA here in Brussels, I realized that it didn't matter at all. There was no difference between me and my parents, basically. The outer circumstances were different. As the outer circumstances were different from the people I met. But what you guys told me and the stories you told me were exactly the same. I was broken. I did step 1, 2, and 3 in one go. I came in October, and then I spent a couple of months sailing around. Before it finally dawned on me, and I did a couple of things during those 3 months. That's the period that I remember as the worst one. where I put myself in danger, and I really actually didn't want to live anymore. And so I stopped. I started going to meetings every day, and I know it sounds really daunting to people. I sometimes make the mistake of rushing up to the newcomer and telling them, come back tomorrow, and then the day after, and then the day after, and then they look at me terrified, and I go like, no. Why would I want to do that? And then I have to explain to them that while they're here, they're not drinking. And while I was in the room, every night I was in the room, I wasn't drinking. I'd made it through a work day. I'd made it home. I'd cooked myself some dinner. I went to the meeting. I sat through the meeting, and then I went home, and I went to bed. And I think that saved my life. And the next thing that saved my life and started the journey of real recovery was people starting to poke me and ask me, do you have a sponsor yet? And I didn't. So I had to find one. And again, I'm a little later. There's a little streak of control in me, so I started making spreadsheets with the women I felt were really... they have good sobriety, definitely, yes. And then the other one where they're like, oh God, she seems a little crazy. And before I knew it, it wasn't two columns, it was five or six, and there's no way I could manage that. So I actually deleted that one. I don't do that very often, but I deleted that spreadsheet, and I went up to the first person I saw and asked her. And she said, no. I already have a sponsee, and I don't think I can manage more. And I looked at him, I went, okay. And then I went home, and I thought, what just happened there? Because there's no resentment here at all. I completely respected that. I thought, I'll try again. And so I tried again, and the lady said, yes, let's meet up for a coffee and see. And then she changed her mind overnight. So she texted me the next day and said, I don't really think this is going to work out. And again, I was like, okay, whatever. And then I met my sponsor at a meeting, and I actually didn't know her very well, and I asked her, and I said, do you sponsor people? And she said, yes. Would you consider sponsoring me then? Okay. And we've been together ever since. And she took me through the program, she took me through the steps the first year, and without that, I really don't think I would have made it through life, because this is life. This is not bad stuff happening to me, it's life. My sister became a single mom. I had to try and help her and support her through that, and I did that without controlling. Then I had, before the first year was over, I had an unfortunate affair with a colleague, of course, like, keep it close to home so that I can stare at him every day for the rest of my life and be reminded of this massive mistake. And then he didn't want me, you know, the only sex affair that we'd agreed on. Of course, I wanted something different, and he didn't want that. So I did have to stare at him, and I swear to God, I could hear his voice from down the hall, like, every single day. And my relationship with my mother was in tatters, so I broke down, and I had my first burnout, sober. And I hated it, and someone reminded me, well, maybe you wouldn't have had this while you were drinking, but you would also not be able to correct whatever's going on here. And I sat for 2 months in the rooms, at the back of the rooms, just crying. Coming out of that, my sister gave birth to her second son. I didn't live. And shortly after we buried him, my mother was diagnosed with cancer. Pancreatic cancer, and she was in a lot of pain. So I decided, again, a bit controlling and thinking I knew the world, that I was going to be a better daughter, so I showed up, like, I flew from Brussels to Denmark every 2 to 3 weeks to try and help her. But she was still an alcoholic, first and foremost, and all her behavior was, she wasn't having it. And so the best thing I did was to actually go back to the pattern we had before. And that helped. And then later that year, she finally died after having set her own birth death day, like a couple of times. She wanted to die on the death day of her deceased partner, and she wanted to die just after Christmas, etc., etc., but she didn't really get to decide on that. It was just the way she was. I'm trying not to be that way. And then I had a bit of a year of relief until the things I'd worked on with my burnout started coming out again. And I decided to, and mind you, no one stopped me here. Yeah? Everybody thought it was a good idea. I decided to go to Nepal for a longer period of time. I'm a Buddhist and I have teachers there that I love to see and talk to, and I thought I'll solidify my meditation practice. And I took a leave of absence and I booked my tickets, I made my plans, and then this happened to be at the end of 2019. And I literally left Belgium on the 13th of March 2020. I had 10 days of freedom in Kathmandu. All my plans had been cancelled by then and I didn't really know what I was doing, but I'd given up my apartment, I couldn't go back to my job. And so I had to be somewhere. 10 days, and then I was in a nice lockdown in this bed and breakfast in Kathmandu. I could see the shrine, the stupa, from my window, but I couldn't go up there. And I sat there for about 2 months and had my fair share of crying and breakdowns before I decided to come back. And then I had a lovely stay with my sister and my nephew, the best that ever happened to our relationship, I think. And then I came back here and decided to buy an apartment and look for another job, like prolonging my leave. And I managed to find an apartment and fulfill that project, but I did manage to find a job, so I went back. And as a good alcoholic I am, I put down a new strategy. So rather than kicking and screaming at everybody, I would just zip it. So I sat alone in a studio waiting for my apartment to free up. I had tenants, working alone, not talking to my colleagues, and really being very, very lonely. And that's been until May last year. That was my reality, more or less. I couldn't find my way in my job, and I ended up breaking down again. And this time it was my doctor who said, "Listen, I think you need to change your job." And I said, "Okay. I'll try to do that." And then it started dawning on me that there's a passage in the Serenity Prayer that, you know, change the things you can. But I just hadn't gotten to this part. So here I am with the foundations of my program, my sponsor, my fellows, people I talk to on a regular basis, see, miss when they move away, and doing life and not wanting to drink. Because there's none of this would have been manageable at all. It was unmanageable enough as it was, but drinking would have been, I don't know, I wouldn't have showed up for the people in my life who needed me the most when they needed me. And I wouldn't have been able to show up for myself today. And I'm really grateful for that. So to anyone who's new, it's a rough ride sometimes, but we're here for each other. Thank you.
You've done such a great job.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Look at the people there. Standing up.
Thank you.